Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The Tories are expected to lose more seats in the upcoming local elections on May the 4th. Trevor Phillips interviewed the Prime Minister on Sky News, asking him whether a general election could take place as early as July.
You are going to get a drubbing at the local elections. How many seats do you have to lose before you accept that the people have lost confidence in you and it's time either for you to stand down or to call a general election?
Well, look, when it comes to a general election, I've been very clear about that multiple times. I said at the beginning of this year...
Well, you have. I'm going to ask you about that. You said second half of this year. Second half of this year could be July.
And again, I'm not going to say anything more than I've already said.
July.
Again, you're going to try and say you're ruling this in, you're ruling that in. I remember when I was...
I just need to know when to take my holiday.
Well, actually, Trevor, it's more important than your holiday or anyone's holiday. I've got a job to do, which is delivering for the country. Okay. We are delivering when it comes to tackling illegal migration. I'm not going to do that, and you're going to try and do this. And I remember you did the same thing when I was Chancellor. Before budgets, you'd go and put this tax to me and this tax cut and say you're ruling this out, you're ruling that out. And I'd give you the same answer every time. Now, on this, though, we've talked about it.
You're not going to rule out July.
You're going to try and draw whatever conclusion you want from I say. I'm going to always say the same thing. You should just listen to what I've said, the same thing I've said all year.
The Conservatives suffered another humiliation this week after MP Dr Dan Poulter quit his party to join Labour. In an interview with Laura Koonsberg, Poulter, who continues to work in the NHS, argued that the Tories have become more of a nationalist party than one of the centre-right.
Well, I've been thinking about it for a little while, and it was alongside my work as an MP. I still work as an NHS doctor and always have done. The health service that I saw under huge strain is very different to the health service of maybe a decade ago. And the struggles and the challenges that patients have been experiencing in accessing, you know, timely good care were something that really resonated with me and stayed with me. And I found it increasingly difficult to look my NHS colleagues in the eye, my patients in the eye, and my constituents in the eye with good conscience. And I feel that the NHS deserves better than it has at the moment in terms of how it's run and governed.
But you pin that on then the government's handling of the health service, because of course the NHS has had lots of problems for a long time. It's run by managers in all sorts of places, but you pin that on the Conservatives' handling of it.
I think it comes from that. I think it comes from values as well. Very clearly, it's been the case in the last 8-10 years or so, the NHS is not a priority to the Conservative Party and to the government. And you know, if we want to do better for patients, want to restore that service to where it was before, then I believe that we need to look to a party that has a track record when it was in government before under Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, that has a track record of delivering for patients, transforming services, getting on top of waiting lists, investing in community healthcare. And that's what Keir Starmer and the Labour Party I know will do, and they will be trusted, I'm sure, to do it by NHS staff as well.
But when you have, as a Conservative, you've previously said that Labour had been profligate and inefficient at how it ran the NHS. You've attacked Labour's record of running the NHS in Wales.
I mean, I think certainly, you know, the NHS in all parts of the country, be it in Scotland or Wales or in England, is under pressure. But the service that I saw during those night shifts was unrecognisable from the service that I worked in routinely before I became an MP. Frankly, patients deserve better. It shouldn't be the case that people, you know, a third of patients are waiting more than 60 days for urgent cancer care. That shouldn't be the case in a civilised health system.
How would you describe the broader change in the Conservative Party?
We now have a Tory party that resembles sometimes a little bit more a nationalist or national party rather than a party of the centre-right. And you know, I feel that actually the changes that the Labour Party has made since 2019 under Keir Starmer, not just on the health service, but particularly on that offer on health about tackling the determinants of poor health, housing, poverty, and all those issues, are the sort of things that are really going to make a big difference. And I think that's why I believe that, you know, why I've made the change I have, and why I believe it will make a difference to the patients I look after.
Wes Streeting told Laura Koonsberg he was not aware of any offers made to defector Dan Poulter by Labour, although he did not strictly rule it out. Streeting said that Labour wants to build a big tent and any disaffected Conservatives were welcome to join.
Labour offer any future baubles to Dan Poulter to get him to defect?
Dan's been very clear he's going back to the NHS full-time. He's not standing for Parliament at the next election. This idea that he's just abandoning the sinking Conservative ship to save himself is nonsense. He's abandoned the Conservative Party to save the NHS. And I think there are millions of Conservative voters across the country who are feeling politically homeless, who can see the chaos and the failure to deliver of now five Conservative prime ministers who are now looking for an alternative. And I hope they will trust the doctor who has seen the Conservative Party up close in Parliament and also the Change Labour Party up close in Parliament. And I hope they will give Change a chance at the next general election by following Dan Poulter, backing Labour, so that we can get our NHS back on its feet and fit for the future, sort out our economy and give Britain its future back.
And obviously, this is something I'm sure you're going to use it in campaigning in the months to come, but did Labour offer him anything in return for him coming across? Did you offer him a place in the House of Lords, perhaps?
And not that I'm aware of. He's said very clearly to me when I was talking to him this week about how he might help. He's going back to the NHS full-time when Parliament is dissolved, which can't come soon enough as far as we're concerned. And look, well, I want to draw on his expertise. He's a really frontline clinician with years of experience in mental health. We are committed to having mental health reform in the first King's speech, because the Mental Health Act is woefully out of date. We've got 40,000 young people waiting more than 2 years for treatment. And I want to make sure that that Mental Health Act reform that Labour government will bring in hits the front line in a positive way as soon as possible, as well as the mental health support in every school and community mental health hubs in every community.
Just on the specifics, though, of this decision that he has made, you say you're not aware that there were any offers made to him. Can you rule that out, that there were any offers made to him?
Well, I'm not aware. No, he's certainly not mentioned anything to me, and neither has the Labour Party. Okay.
On GB News, Home Office Minister Chris Philp defended the Conservatives' record on the NHS and said Labour were doing an appalling job in Wales.
Well, obviously, you know, we're always sad to lose a colleague, although I haven't seen Dan around that much recently. Look, I think the Conservative record on the NHS is very good. Well, I mean, it means what I said. We've got a fantastic record on the NHS. We've got record levels of spending, £165 billion a year, even adjusting for inflation, more than we've ever spent before in history. We've got record numbers of doctors, record numbers of nurses. Just in the last year alone, the NHS has grown by 68,000 staff, and there are today 7,000 more doctors and 21,000 more nurses than there were a year ago. And the numbers are also much higher than they were in 2010. So huge investment going into the NHS, and it's showing results. The waiting lists that obviously grew up during COVID and were exacerbated by the doctor's strike are now falling on a sustained basis. They've fallen by 200,000 across the last 5 months.
OK, so what's motivated this then? Because you're painting a completely different picture of the NHS to a doctor actually working in it, who now says he can't look his patients in the face by remaining as a Conservative.
Well, I mean, obviously, he's been working in the NHS in a specific place, and I'm giving you the figures for the NHS as a whole. In terms of his motivation, you'd have to ask him about that. But he says he's joining Labour because he thinks Labour will do a better job. But if you look at what Labour are doing in Wales, where Labour does run the NHS, they are doing an appalling job. Tens of thousands of people each year are fleeing the Welsh run NHS, sorry, the Labour-run NHS in Wales to have treatment in England. The waiting lists, the proportion of the public who are on either very long waiting lists or indeed the proportion of the public in Wales on a waiting list at all is higher, materially higher, yes, than it is in England.
Scottish First Minister Humza Yousaf is in a very precarious position, with two votes of no confidence in him and in the Scottish Government tabled by the Scottish Conservatives and Scottish Labour for this week, following the collapse of the SNP's power-sharing agreement with the Scottish Greens. Yousaf has insisted he has no intention of resigning and asked for constructive contribution from the other parties. However, he may need support from the ALBA party to survive the no-confidence votes. Alex Salmond told Koonsberg that ALBA's Ash Reagan had gone to Yousaf with reasonable, positive
proposals.
We're in sunny Aberdeenshire here, as you see, so hopefully we can put some sunlight into Scottish politics. I mean, Ash Regan, who leads ALEPA in the Scottish Parliament, is obviously in a highly influential position given the political arithmetic. She will be meeting with Hamza Yousaf at his invitation. She'll take with her some very reasonable, positive proposals, which hopefully, if the First Minister accepts them, will help him to get out of a very tight political corner.
Ian Blackford, the former SNP leader this morning, has told us pretty clearly it's not going to happen. There can't be a deal with your party.
No, I think what the rejection was something about an electoral pact. Well, given that I never made the proposal in the first place, that was an overwrite in a Sunday newspaper, and we're not particularly bothered by that. What Ash Regan will be taking is measures as how we can re-emphasise independence as the priority of the Scottish Government. That's what both ALEPA and the SNP should be interested in. How we can move away from the identity agenda that's taken up so much bandwidth of the Scottish Government, and also how we can return to what, let's call it, the people's agenda of education, health, housing, and above all, jobs and industry. And Ash Regan has some proposals on how to do that. So these are very reasonable proposals, and let's hope that Hamza Yousaf gives it a receptive hearing.
Finally, Labour have given a guarantee that they will keep the pensions triple lock in place for the duration of the next Parliament if they win the general election. Trevor Phillips questioned Wes Streeting over Labour's motivation for supporting the policy.
Labour's decided to reward rich pensioners at the expense of the health service, police and young people who can't get on the housing ladder.
I don't think that's a fair characterisation either of the policy or of the state of the country. When I'm out, in fact, just the other week, I spoke to a pensioner in my constituency who was unloading her shopping, and she stopped me to have a chat because she wanted to tell me that she is worried about the cost of living, that the price of her shop has gone up, and that she is struggling in retirement. And this is someone who's worked hard all her life, lives in a home that she owns, and she is struggling, and she's not able to live the retirement she expected, taking the grandkids on holiday, those sorts of things, because life is too tough. I had an email from another pensioner whose teeth are literally rotten to the extent he won't leave the house. But when you make sweeping generalisations about the pensioners, bear in mind, those are the people you're talking about. And I think that it's important to bear in mind with pensioners too. If the economic circumstances change, if the cost of living change, they can't go out and earn more money. So we're giving pensioners that certainty, that reassurance that Labour will keep the triple
lock. There is no doubt that there are poor pensioners. But here is what the Office for National Statistics says, if you want to talk about sweeping generalisations. Average wealth varied most by age in the UK, with median total wealth amongst respondents aged in their early 60s almost nine times as high as those aged in their early 30s. Nine times. We are, me, a wealthy older generation. And you've decided to keep the triple lock, so you're right, but you are rewarding older, rich people at the expense of young people who cannot actually afford to buy that.
I don't buy into that kind of intergenerational conflict argument. What I do think is that we need to give pensioners the reassurance to know that as they have planned for retirement and as they are now in retirement, that a Labour government will protect the triple lock, unlike the Conservatives,
by the
way.
This is about votes, isn't it?
The 46...
Older people vote.
It is about the fact the Conservatives have said they will scrap national insurance, which would put a £46 billion hole in the public finances. And when pressed, Rishi, will you rule out cuts to the state pension or cuts to the NHS or rise in national insurance? The Prime Minister pointedly failed to rule out any one of those three things.
He can't
reassure pensioners. A Labour government will.
OK, he's not here, and we are talking about you.
Well,
you're
no,
now
he doesn't do live TV interviews, does he? He does the cosy pre-records. He doesn't like live scrutiny, but that tells you everything you need to know about
Rishi
Sunak.
If I can say so, I don't think he was very cosy at the end of our interview.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Joe Bedell Brill. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.